Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Achtung Millwall supports the Lions Food Hub. This is a friendly local food hub. It's based in Bermondsey. It's run by our very own Kelly Webster of the Millwall Lionesses, a very well-known Millwall fan. They do need supplies, dear listeners. Before we get into the show today, I have posted they need tinned meat, they need toiletries, they need soup, they need tinned fruit and veg. If you can help in any way, they are on Twitter, at Lions Food Hub. DM them, you can DM me at Achtung Millwall, and I will pass on any help and information that we can. Lions Food Hub, at Lions Food Hub. Thank you for listening. Now back to the show.
You're listening to Achtung Millwall, broadcasting from the beautiful South Birmingham. Accept no substitute.
Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to Achtung Millwall, a special international, interminable international weekend break edition. Joining me, who else do you want on such a show other than the man himself, Mr. Harry Warren? Welcome to the show, H.
You're right, Nick. Thanks for having me.
You've been out running, mate. How's your personal best time going?
So I just shaved 3 minutes off my 10K. So I've done my 10K and my 5K personal best in the last 7 days. So,
I remember you when your middle name was Harry Guinness Warren, mate. Now you're into this 5K personal best bit zone, you know, out with all the runners of Essex in the park.
I blame Alex Russell, really. That's who I blame for these things. See, normally when Alex mentions something, I'm very impressionable, Nick. I don't know if you realise that. you just go running. Oh, yeah, I'll get into it. Yeah, it's all or nothing. So I decided we'd do that. But we've moved on from Guinness. We tend to, because I've read somewhere that sports scientists say that you can have a glass of red wine if you're a professional sportsman or something, that I now decide I take the glass to mean that I can have a bottle in a glass, and that counts.
One of those full bottle glasses. They're great Christmas presents for the person in your life who likes to drink. So thank you for joining us, Harry. I thought we'd just dwell, as it's international weekends, I thought we'd just dwell on a few international related matters, also including some of the best, in my opinion, the best Millwall player performances in an international shirt. That I've picked out five fairly arbitrary choices, listeners, so do feel free to email me at your leisure and correct me and put me straight or whatever, whatever way you see the choices that I've made. But I just want to start, Harry. We are in an international break weekend, which is a fairly modern concept because it was always, you know, fixture clutter and blah, blah, blah in the past. Now they have these breaks early season. There's one in normally September, October, I think, isn't there? And then now the March break. How do you like these breaks? Do you like them? Do you enjoy the international football? Do you see it as a crashing bore? How do you find international break weekends, mate?
I think realistically, like most people, I find them absolutely turgidly boring. The results are kind of, you know, with the greatest respect to San Marino, the results already telegraphed before. England could pick 23 strangers pretty much from probably from the Championship, League One, League Two level. They could pick 23 of the best from them and beat San Marino. That's not to knock them, but the way that the World Cup's going, that we're going to have 48 teams and the Euros will eventually be made bigger or some form, they want more international football, which is completely at odds with most football fans, funnily enough.
Yeah, it's a strange thing. I mean, we were just speaking off air, listeners. I caught a debate online with Barry Glendenning of the Guardian the other night, Harry. I don't know if you saw it, but he was having this debate, and it kind of rested on the concept of there being small nations and big nations. In some ways, I think Barry was making a comparison with the idea of there being an elite. So you can, you know, if you took that in club football, you're talking about the elite of European football, the Manchester Cities, the Barcelonas, the Bayern Munichs, and so on, and the others. Should they play lesser lights? Like, you know, should Manchester City play, I don't know, Rochdale in a League Cup? And this kind of idea. And I think he was trying to draw comparisons with San Marino as a good example, because obviously the England game in the week finished as a 5-0 win for England. And the likelihood of San Marino or maybe I saw Gibraltar playing yesterday against Montenegro. Maybe the chances of them winning or doing anything are fairly remote. I mean, I go around in circles, Harry, if I'm going to be honest, because I can get both sides of this argument. There's no contest in a kind of a ritual execution of England playing San Marino. But then again, in football, there's always the FA Cup principle. There's always an outside shot, a giant killing, isn't there? I watched last night, I watched the Republic of Ireland, a poor Republic of Ireland performance. Well, no, I stuck with it because what struck me, and just as we're doing this recording today, listeners, it struck me that Luxembourg, their opponents, who won the game 1-0 in the end, weren't as bad as maybe the blanket definition small nation. Do you know what I'm saying, Harry? They they had a couple of moves, and I put the court started catching the game for about 20 minutes in, I think. And one of the early moves was a good move by Luxembourg, good break from defence, and they went close and they had chances. Now I'm not here to knock the Republic of Ireland squad. I think they're in a transitional stage at the moment, and they're finding it difficult. But there's a nation that has played to a fairly high level. The Republic of Ireland, I'm talking about, in the past, they've achieved. They got into World Cups under Jack Charlton, and at the moment they're struggling. So, you know, the idea that Luxembourg shouldn't take the field against one of the bigger nations in football terms in Europe, in Ireland, strikes me as a bit. What's the word? They have every right to be on the same pitch. In fact, they won the game. They proved their right last night. You know.
Yeah, I think I'd say about the Republic of Ireland is, they decided to get rid of Mick McCarthy, which is always the harbinger of doom for any professional football outfit. I mean, what? You got left Ipswich, they got relegated. Left Wolves, they got relegated. Left the Republic of Ireland, they haven't won a game since he left. And now he's doing really well at Cardiff. But that's Mick aside. I think the idea for me is that, you know, these elite nations, there's probably, the top 10 around the world, you know, arguably, depending on squads, the FIFA rankings, whatever.
They would be the World Cup winning nations of the past.
Argentina, without Messi, a dog awful, I'll be totally honest.
At the moment,
which is the thing with international football, is that's the lock-in there, in a nutshell, is that you are judged on the best players in your nation at one particular time. Now, I'd say within a four-year cycle, you probably have one or two changes normally on a good cycle. On a bad cycle, you could have all the players come to the same age and have a completely new 11.
Yeah.
But, looking at it sensibly, the last four of the World Cup from 4 years ago or 3 years ago, you know, do they need to really qualify? Do they need to qualify again? Should that now, if we've got 48 teams in there, do England, France, Belgium and Croatia need to qualify again? Should they be asked to qualify? Is there a reason for them to qualify? No, should they be the globe-trotting nations to give San Marino their run out against them in a non-competitive friendly? So they still get the idea of playing England and France and Belgium and all these others. I think that's more the model that we'll end up going to, because generally, I think, you know, you'll earn more money out of England being free to play a friendly against Brazil, for instance, than England playing a competitive game against San Marino. I know which one I'd rather pay money to go and see at the ground and
what absolutely
companies would think. So
yeah,
it absolutely will follow the money, Nick. So presumably my premonition will be correct.
We'll see. I mean, I think you're right. I mean, the fundamental point of any sport, any football being the major sport that we all follow, is that any match, any point of contest must be that. And there must be something at stake for me. And there should be a reasonable balance of strength on both sides. You know, now obviously, you know, you can't always achieve that. And there is always a place for England to play San Marino, in my opinion, but it's probably just not as often as the schedule seems to produce at the moment, because it's all being pumped up to this mega level where you've got to have massive contests and massive competitions. And I'm not sure that we've gained much by that. I am old enough, Harry, to remember the 1970 World Cup with just 16 teams in it, four groups of four. And that's still remembered as a classic. And I think it's that concentration of talent that goes missing a little bit when you have these widespread, you know, they're talking about expanding the World Cup to 38 teams, I think, in future competition. It just creates loads of mediocrity at the early stages.
I'll put it to people. I mean, I don't know how many people have Sky Sports that listen to this. I'm lucky enough to have that. And you'll sit there on a Sunday, so I get treated to the draw machines that are Millwall Football Club on a Saturday. And I didn't really miss them yesterday, I'll be totally honest, but that's another thing. But you'll sit there and I'll watch five games on Sunday. Five games. No, you're sitting there over a weekend, and by the fifth game, I can't remember necessarily what happened in the third game or the second game. You'll remember what happened in the game that had the most drama or the incident or whatever at the weekend. But I don't think the kids watch football like that. You know, I think people who work in football or whatever will watch every game and so on and so forth for a variety of reasons, and football lovers of a certain vintage. Which I'll put myself into, but the kids will watch Match of the Day and watch the highlights package. It will take them 9 minutes to have five games of football condensed into 9 minutes of action on YouTube or a 60-minute Match of the Day 2 program of a Sunday evening.
Harry.
Yeah, but the game still happened. I don't understand. There's a weird parallel where the kids, you know, the football authorities seem to want to pander to this demand for games, without really realizing there's not really a demand for games. There's just demand for action to be cut down into
TikTok minutes.
Yes, right. Absolutely.
No, you're right. I think it's the way of the world. I mean, we can rail against it. Whether the FA are correct, the UEFA and FIFA, they're all in this cartel together. And I use that word quite deliberately. You know, this is the way that the world is going, for better or for probably for worse, as I might see it. But then
is
I
this
come
about
from
to be the FA bashing section?
I'll ring
the bell. I mean, whoever runs non-league that's fining Dulwich Hamlet for not fulfilling their games whilst the global pandemic is on is the FA are the custodians of the game.
I mean, veered wildly off subject, but let's go with it. This is the National League teams that were struggling to play, or there was the pandemic was striking. They couldn't field teams, or there was also no clear guidance from government about whether games could proceed or should proceed or not. And then the National League slapped fines on clubs that decided to cancel just ahead of the government restrictions. So that's, what can we call that?
For acting like a responsible employer or irresponsible retail outlet to their staff, because players are staff and their fans are their customers, as long as we don't like being called customers, but in that particular idea, they are their customers.
That's football management at the highest levels, Harry.
Well, it's just a nonsense, isn't it? I mean, I don't know legally. I mean, the problem is the FA are lawyered up to a level that, you know, a non-league side could only dream of. But
absolutely,
it's completely outrageous. I mean, the fact of the matter is that, you know, they talk about the success of non-league, and I'm gonna slag Salford City off here. I'm going for it. So we'll take Salford City. So they're a successful non-league side by having basically Gary Neville, who rails against sacking managers every every few months. So how many managers have they had in the last year?
They've rattled through, I don't know how many.
They had them two guys that were on the BBC channel. Then they sold the rights to that programme, what was sort of Salford City season 4-part drama on the BBC, sold that to Sky Sports. That's what the FA want. They want the razzmatazz without any of the problems that creates. And football is in a state at the moment. It really, really is in a state.
Oh, absolutely.
The lower you go, the worse it is. And I don't know. Do we need Wembley? That's a bigger question.
Well, that was going to be one of my talking points. And it comes back to the small nations debate, if you want to call it that. And I don't quite like that term because, there's many small nations, so-called small populations, that have achieved great things in football. But, I quite liked it when England went on the road and they would take the big games to Old Trafford, or now maybe they use the Arsenal Emirates Stadium, Tottenham Stadium in London. We're not short of top.
Cancel our stadium as well, they should probably use, because we're still paying for it.
Well, to be fair, I mean, you know, if excluding its origins and all the rest of it, I mean, that's in any other nation in the world, the Olympic Stadium, London Stadium, whatever you want to call it, Council House Stadium, that would be the centrepiece of that country's sporting infrastructure. We're lucky in this country, in London particularly, that we've got stadiums, we're dripping in them, aren't we? I mean,
yeah,
you've got Arsenal, you've got Tottenham, you've got the Olympic Stadium. And then in the second rank, if you want to call it that, you've got Chelsea, you've got, you've got the Den. Not forget, it's not a bad stadium. You've got plenty of facilities in this city, which is the dream of many a nation around the world. But I quite liked it. My point being that Wembley is not necessary, in my opinion, in this day. There's nothing particularly special about it, other than it holds 80,000. But I mean, Arsenal holds 68, you know.
I think it's one of the worst stadiums I've ever been to for atmosphere and practicality. It's not the same as the old Wembley. Now, the old Wembley was I don't know if we romanticise the fact that it had seen the 1966 World Cup final and all
that. It had history, didn't it? The white horse on the pitch and clearing things off.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And they took, I mean, this one has its new history, the Steve Morrison version of history with Millwall. Of course, another Millwall first. But the fact of the matter is that stadium was being offered to be bought before the pandemic. I remember, I can't remember if it was up, you know, it was plus $100 million and so on and so forth.
Weren't Tottenham talking about buying it?
I think it was the mad bloke that owns Fulham.
Fulham.
Yeah, he also owns the Jacksonville Jaguars NFL team. And
I know the man you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Is it Sheikh something?
Khan. Sure. I think his name is Khan, I think, but I'd have to check that. And I don't know who you mean. Yeah.
You know, everyone knows. Hopefully, everyone knows what I mean. But he was talking about buying it because the idea of the NFL is to have a side in London because they are fed up of paying to come here. I mean, they have now four in normal times. They would have four regular season games here, and two at Tottenham Stadium and two at Wembley. I think their idea is to have a side here and bring it on the road as a road show. Again, matching the parallels to football in Europe and around the world now. So it's just depressing. I mean, they'd sell it for probably like $200 million. It would go in the back pocket of someone. It wouldn't get invested in grass.
Well, it wouldn't get invested, no. Which is a problem. But I quite liked England. You could play England versus San Marino at any of the Southampton. Absolutely. You could take it to Newcastle. You could take it to Birmingham.
But there is nothing more important than getting kids excited about football. That is the future of football, is to be able to go and see England, go and see Harry Kane, go and see Harry Maguire, like you can go. And the fact is, you know, the tickets should be cheap to watch the international side. You can't do nothing. The FA can't do anything really because of a capitalist society to regulate the price of tickets. However, it can lead by example. The price of tickets should be cheap for kids to go and watch and their families to go and watch England when they do go on this road. It always comes
back to the management of the game at the highest levels, which is historically built around the concept of just making as much money as possible. That seems to be as far as it goes, Harry.
We're in April. You'd think that football pitches would be pristine because they've had no one playing on them for 4 months.
No one maintaining them either.
That's it. That's it. But you've got these councils that pay, you know, you pay your council tax and so on and so forth. And
don't start me on Newham and potholes in roads. Let's get another podcast, mate.
I think we've veered wildly off subject then.
We're veering. I'm going to take a little bit of a break there, Harry, because we've veered wildly off subject. We're going to come back after the break with our thoughts on Millwall's glittering international array of talent over time.
You're listening to After Millwall.
Welcome back to the show, dear listeners. Talk to Harry about an international break. We've veered off the subject there a little bit. But I wanted to mention before we start, Harry, the legend that is Jimmy Abdou, who earlier this week led, still playing at the age of 36. He plays in France and Martigues and the southern French side. And he's led the Comoros Islands to their first ever African Cup of Nations finals next year. Massive achievement for that nation. One of the small nations, I suppose you'd call them. I don't know how they're going to get on because they'll be up against some very big players in that finals tournament. But what an achievement for that side and for Jimmy at the age of 36 to get to, you know, to say historic, he says here on this quote I've picked up here. It's historic. And so it is for him. I think it's wonderful.
Yeah, I think it's brilliant for Jimmy. It'd be nice if we offered Jimmy the Tim Cahill contract. I'd very much like that.
We would have got more out of him than we got. Yeah, we've got one elbow on a chin for a Fulham player. And
yeah, we can give Max McClellan and the media team some work to do, couldn't we? You can shoot another return video. Just Jimmy just playing the goal at Leeds on the loop.
Anyway, well done, Jimmy Abdou. Well done, the Comorosians, if that's the correct term. And I think we'll all be following.
I think they're a poorer nation as well. So if you are into buying football shirts, if you can get your hand on them, I think they'd be very, very grateful for that.
Yeah, it'll be wonderful to see them do well. And, you know, let's fingers crossed for Jimmy in those finals. So I wanted to dwell, if we may, Harry, on Millwall's internationals over the years. We do have quite a large number of internationals, actually. It's quite strange. I just sent a link to the wonderful Millwall History website, listeners. If you go on that website, millwallhistory.org.uk, it's a wonderful repository of knowledge. There's a great section on Millwall's international players capped whilst wearing the shirt of Millwall. So that's the only kind of rule I've stuck into this particular show, that we're only considering these players you know, whilst they're Millwall players, but we may break that rule because that's the kind of rock and roll show that we are. So anyway, 121 internationals, Harry Warren, for the Republic of Ireland. That's our biggest single contribution to another country's playing staff. That's quite a number. Some big names in that list as well. When you look through, and I'm thinking of Eamon Dunphy, one of the big names in the... It was for many, many years, he was our regular international when I first started going in the 70s. A very silky, very skillful midfield player. And these days, a very opinionated man on Irish radio and television. He puts out a very, very good podcast, in actual fact. It will challenge you if you listen to it, listeners. Don't go under expecting to be cuddled. But he's an interesting guy, Eamon Dunphy. But there's quite a few names in that list. I'm just looking now, Harry. Tony Cascarino, Aidan O'Brien.
AOB, yeah.
Mick McCarthy is in there, Gary Waddock, Dave Savage, and Richard Sadlier just won one cap for the Republic while in 2002. But that's 121 caps for the Republic over time, followed closely by Northern Ireland. There's nearly 200 Irish caps if you include the Republic and probably controversially. Yep. I'm controversially including Northern Ireland in that Irish. Yeah, yeah. don't at me. Don't email me, listeners.
Yeah, don't. That was an own goal of systematic proportions.
Of Jordan Archer proportions. We will come back to Jordan Archer later on in this conversation. One thing I found fascinating, I mean, 121 Republic of Ireland, 61 Northern Ireland, 38 Welsh caps. How many Scottish caps would you say, dear listener? How many would you say without looking, Harry?
I've already looked, so I can't answer.
It's just one. That's strange, isn't it? When you think there's nearly Included two Irelands as one, and nearly 200. Welsh, 38 caps. And then, you know, we've had more Icelandic caps than we have Scots. More for St. Kitts, two St. Kitts, one for Scotland. That was Jordan Archer.
Yeah, he didn't exactly impress on his one cap, did he?
Peru, a friendly in Lima for Peru 2, Scotland 0. Goalkeeper Jordan Archer endured a difficult debut, it says on the BBC website.
Difficult, yeah.
Conceded a goal either side of half-time. This may be familiar for you, Harry. The Mill goalkeeper rushed from his line and left his goal exposed, leading to Scott McKenna blocking the resulting shot with his hand. So he's come out and Scott McKenna's had to block a shot for a penalty. And then in the second half, Jefferson Fafan added the second after the interval. This will be familiar for you, H. His shot slipping beneath Archer's hand for 2-0 and game over for the Scots in Lima. That was in 2018. 16 Comoros Islands. 16, there's Jimmy Abdu, obviously. 16 caps for the Comoros Islands and just one for Scotland. It's a very strange, given how long the club's existed. And it was founded by Scotsmen, and yet we've only ever had one Scots cap.
Yeah, that's. I mean, to compare that as well, we've had 23 caps for Australia.
Yeah.
And 34 for Canada.
Yeah.
Absolutely unbelievable. I mean, well, I only thought two Canadians had ever played football for Millwall. I forgot Mark Bircham was...
qualified. He was from Shepherd's Bush, wasn't he? I mean, but I don't know. Yeah. I suppose they've gone back into the grandparent rule there to find that. But even if you look at the USA, 18 caps for the USA, it's quite a lot. I mean, John Kerr and Casey Keller, these are, as Millwall players, I keep stressing. But you're also forgetting the great contribution of Adrian Serioux for Canada as well there, Harry.
Absolutely.
2004, 2005, and his long throw. And
I mean, to be honest, if you are going to use a long throw for it, I think Adrian Serioux is your man, isn't he?
I always wanted him to do well because I wanted that long throw to become part of our game. We've never really had a long throw merchant, really. I mean, Conor McLaughlin, I think, had a reasonable throw on him, but we've never really had a long throw man like other clubs seem to. And I always wanted Adrian Serioux to be a better player. It just wasn't good enough.
There was that one day, wasn't there? It was one glittering day. I think it was debut. Where he played like Edgar Davids, and it was... It was ridiculous. You just sat there and went, where have we found this guy from? Why has no one scouted him? And it became very quickly afterwards of why no one was there.
Well, he threw it from, I think it was inside the middle half, and he threw it in, was it Leicester? I threw it into the Leicester penalty area and caused mayhem for a moment. I mean, there wasn't much mayhem once they cottoned on to what he could do, but that was that. Yeah. I'd forgotten Simeon Jackson played for Canada.
I'd forgotten Simeon Jackson even existed, let alone played for Canada.
And Chris Twardek, who's a name as well.
Yeah.
Like two caps for Canada. But it's interesting. I mean, you know, just the contrast. 10 England caps, Harry, and that's one of them's going to be the subject of my first greatest ever Millwall performance, if you will.
Is the greatest England performance there the fact that you've actually been able to play for Millwall and be called up for England at the same time?
Well, in the early days, these are all pre-war, obviously.
Oh, right, okay.
We haven't had an England cap since J.R. Smith, Reg Smith, and the performance I've picked out for Reg Smith. He played twice for England in 1938, was a 4-0 win over Norway for England. I will stick his photo online, scored twice in a 4-0 win for the Three Lions over Norway. The Times newspaper described it as a very polite affair. Apparently Norwegians were
happy to be there.
They were happy to be there, and they made a beeline for the great names of England afterwards. So the great names, so you got Tommy Lawton playing at number 9. Smith was scored twice. Stanley Matthews was there. So these were Stan Cullis. These were major, major names of world football at the time. And the Norwegians were made a beeline to shake their hands and just be photographed in the company of them. So I think the Times described it as a very pleasant Wednesday afternoon as it was played, with very little to trouble the football reporters of the day. But it was a 4-0 win for England, played at Newcastle, St James's Park, in front of 39,000. The receipts, because I know you're interested, Harry, were £2,416, 19 shillings exactly.
No sixpence.
No sixpence. And the second half was broadcast live on the radio from 3:15 to 4:15. This is different times. The England goals, Reg Smith headed in a Matthews, Stanley Matthews cross on 18 minutes and turned in the rebound for Tommy Lawton shot, which hit the crossbar on 40. Those were the two goals for Millwall's Reg Smith. He got two caps for England and then the Second World War rather intervened in matters generally, as with so many others. And that was
the club never recovered.
The club never recovered. I have a Daily Herald report. This is dated the 10th of November 1938. So I'm just going to read two paragraphs for you, Harry. The interesting English debutant was Mules Smith, whose live wire tactics in the first half opened many avenues to goal and marked him down as a player to receive very serious consideration in future internationals. Then the report continues. The reporter says, I would give Smith his big international break going forwards. More than that, I'm inclined to have the view that the Millwall man could have been included in the England side earlier this season, much to England's advantage. So a real prospect, Reg Smith, J.R. Smith. When I stick the photograph online, listeners will probably recognise him. He's been on a few kind of covers of Millwall textbooks and things over the years. But there we are, the war rather intervened in Reg Smith's career, as with so much, as you say yourself there, Harry, with the club. The den was bombed, there was a fire, the main stand burned down. And what was interesting was that Reg Smith was part of a championship-winning team, 3rd Division South, the Lions won 1937-38. 38-39, they were getting themselves settled for a promotion push to the top flight. And then the little man in Berlin decided that it was time for a bit of a disruption in Europe, and the rest of it is history. So we never really recovered.
He overdid it, didn't
he? To this day. He overdid it
on his French holiday.
He went too far. He went too far. But there we are. Reg Smith, 10 England caps for overall for the club, and Reg played twice for in an England shirt.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Achtung, Millwall. Now I've picked out my second greatest Millwall performance internationally. I've picked out Tony Cascarino, who played in a 1-1 draw for the Republic of Ireland versus the USSR. In a group match at the Euro 1988 finals. Ireland would actually exit the group one place above England, who famously went home without winning a game. I think we got beaten all three games in 1988.
That's what happens if you play Colton Palmer.
There we are. This was under Bobby Robson at the time. Cascarino was playing for the Republic of Ireland. And I thought he'd scored, but it was actually Ronnie Whelan who'd scored. He's wrongly listed on the Millwall History website as scoring, but it was actually Whelan. It's described here in the, this is the Irish Independent, I think. The Irish Evening Herald described this game as Irish soccer's finest hour. A magnificent performance against the Russian side that would go on, I think, to be beaten in the famous 1988 final against Holland, and that was played in Munich, and that was where was it Van Basten scored that famous volleyed goal, goal for the ages. But the Irish held their own against the finalists there. And Millwall's Tony Cascarino, still at this time playing at Coldblow Lane, was part of that Irish side. Mick McCarthy, mentioned him earlier on, Harry.
Yep.
He's my third choice. I've tried to pick games and situations that have a Millwall player featured at the highest level possible. So hence Reg Smith playing for England and scoring. Obviously in those days, England didn't take part in World Cups. But I've picked Mick McCarthy, who played in the World Cup quarterfinal for the Republic against Italy in 1990, Italia 90, a classic World Cup. Do you remember Italia 90? Is that before your time, Harry?
I was not quite born yet. I think
you were not quite born, then you won't remember it, mate. But no. It's famous for having the Pavarotti theme. You know, it's become kind of iconic for World Cups. Gascoigne crying because we, booked a game.
It's up your second booking in a weird rule that you had been. Yeah.
Probably as close as England ever come to since 66 to World Cup final, possibly winning it. I think we may have won it if we'd got into the final, but it was not to be. But the Republic of Ireland were also very good side. This would be the side that featured the likes of Whelan, Ray Houghton, I think.
John Aldridge,
Kevin Moran. I'm just looking at this Daily Mirror report here. Bitter Irish go down fighting. Big Jack Charlton fury over the ref, who he felt was an Italian biased referee, a Portuguese referee who favoured the Italians.
At their own World Cup,
played in Rome, in their home stadium.
I can't imagine why he thought they might have favoured their own side. No.
Jack Charlton scarcely conceal his anger and eventually took it out on an Italian cameraman. So you don't want to be taking pictures of Big Jack when his team are getting cheated, as he would see it, of a place in a World Cup semi-final. I mean, this was a decent, it's just interesting contrast with the poor showing last night from the Republic side. But this was a great Republic of Ireland side, managed brilliantly by Jack Charlton. But that featured Mick McCarthy, who had not long come to Coldblow Lane and would eventually topple Bruce Rioch as player manager and then manager, and the rest of his management career is history. Interesting character, Mick McCarthy, Harry. I've always found him, managerially speaking, he's okay, but he's not brilliant, is he?
He's a ham sandwich.
He's never gonna, you wouldn't cross the road to watch a Mick McCarthy side. You wouldn't get, I mean, Ipswich, you mentioned them earlier on. You won't get relegated with Mick McCarthy in your team or managing your team, but you probably won't win much either, you know. You won't be excited, will you?
Well, I mean, when he wins promotion later on, we're all going to have to chat later on this season. We're
have
all
to change this. I've got to edit it.
I can't remember who said it, but somebody picked him as the worst Millwall manager of all time, didn't they, recently?
Yeah. It was a strange period because when he first came to us, which was in the immediate aftermath of Bruce Rioch, who was a fantastic spotter of talent and a fantastic tactician, but an awful manager of men. You know, he was like your
not to lead, basically.
Modern teaching listeners, obviously, some of my relations are teachers and kids now go to school. It's a very different environment, but we came from an era where teachers were kind of people to be feared for their irrational kind of punishments they meted out for not having your tie done up correctly and not having
your shirt untucked,
shirt undone, all this kind of thing. And Bruce Rioch fell into that kind of militaristic
sergeant zone. Major,
but a great spotter of talent, Harry. So Mick McCarthy, when he took over in 1992, I believe, was playing some really good football with some really talented players that had had a burden lifted by the removal of Bruce Rioch, the man that brought them all together. So McCarthy, actually, in his early days, played, in my opinion, some of the best football that I've ever seen.
So basically you're saying he took over from someone that was like Germans with cooking. That's like they have all the ingredients, but somehow managed to make sauerkraut.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can look on YouTube. I'm sure there's a famous 6-1 victory over Brentford that was played in front of the big match cameras. He had this midfield diamond, which was quite revolutionary at the style at the time. Hadn't been seen before. The ball was played to feet and moved around.
That's even more revolutionary, that the ball was played to feet at Millwall.
Genuinely, I'd never seen football played as beautifully as the kind of the last gasp of Rioch and early period of Mick McCarthy. The players had almost had this weight lifted from their shoulders, and it was wonderful to watch. I think as Mick McCarthy went along, it became more your kind of stolid McCarthy that people would know now as a manager, you know, this kind of Mr. Average, if you like. But that's not knocking him. I think, you know, there's a place for that in football. But certainly towards the late period, he was treading water a little bit. And he never reproduced that early style of football. But in all honesty, 1992, 1993, wonderful, wonderful football. You'd have been oozing over it, Harry, if you'd been around at the time, mate.
I was around. I just obviously was...
You're too young to appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the first Millwall manager I can remember, believe it or not, I actually can't remember anyone before McGee. That's terrible, isn't it?
Well, not if you're young, you're not going to pay much attention to the bloke that's...
You start turning up and... You know, it's a very weird time that you ended up that my first Millwall managers were like McGee. This idea that we won Division Two is the first year I can remember me going. I was going before that, but that's kind of my first memories of it.
Remember success.
Yeah, so a Millwall thing of a team that was 20 years ago now.
Yeah, it's the 20th anniversary. I'm going to give away ideas. We're an ideas factory for other shows, listeners. I might do a 20th anniversary show about the 2000-2001 season because it's one that lives large in a lot.
The only time I've been on the pitch, Nick, before.
Did you go on the pitch? Did you?
I was one of the children after the presentation the players had been run off the pitch by most of the EBL. I sort of went on the pitch as a child to just basically say that I'd been on the pitch after the corner flags, the hoardings, the advertising hoardings.
Every souvenir that could be retrieved, yeah.
Yeah. So, they were nice days. Yeah, I think Mick McCarthy gets a bit of a bad deal. Yeah, I think so. I think he's a decent football manager. Not blessed with success, but you can only have one champ. You can only have one champion a year, can't you?
Ain't that the truth? Number four, I'm going to go for another player of that era. In fact, I think McCarthy brought him into the den. Much loved, one of football's journeyman workhorses who give you everything, and that's all we ever asked for at the den. But it's Dave Mitchell. I've picked him playing for Australia, Harry. Came in the 73rd minute of a famous playoff between Australia and Argentina to make the 1994 World Cup, which was played in the USA. And Argentina had struggled in their qualification, South American group. And Australia had won, I think it's called Oceania.
Yeah, that's right.
Their group. And they had a playoff, a two-legged playoff against Argentina, which featured Diego Maradona. The game in Sydney was a one-all draw. A guy called Tony Vidmar scored in the 42nd minute for Australia to equalise an earlier goal for Argentina. Balbo had scored. And then an own goal in the reverse leg in the Estadio Monumental Stadium in Buenos Aires in front of 59,000. That would have been rocking that night, I tell you that much.
Yeah.
1-0 win for Argentina to send Argentina to the 1994 World Cup. Mitchell featured in the Sydney leg.
Was Maradona cheating at this point, or was he?
I think that was the famous World Cup
where he got banned.
Yeah. Well, he if you ever see that famous footage of him running up to the camera and sticking his, I think he put his mouth over the camera or something, didn't he? I think.
Yeah.
he was certainly firing on all cylinders, Harry. Let's put it that way, mate. He was fired up.
He was on full 3 a.m. in Weatherspoon's mode.
great player. Sadly now gone. One of those...
I've got to say that is my least favourite goal of all time. The one he scores against England. I think it's...
The handball.
Yeah. No, the one after the handball.
The classic.
I think it's the most ridiculously overrated goal of all time from a defensive standpoint. Someone should kick him about 40. I know they attempt to kick him, but they attempt to kick him far too late. The one who's on the halfway line when he picks it up, just crunch him. Just
wasn't that Robbie Ryan's tactic against Cristiano Ronaldo to kick? He couldn't get near him.
That is a swinging doors moment of the last 15 years of football. That is right there. If Kevin Muscat is fit, Cristiano Ronaldo would not have been Cristiano Ronaldo because the first step over would have been interesting. Let's put it that way.
he would have found some method of causing him harm. So there we are. Anyway, Dave Mitchell, great workman-like player for the Lions in the early part of the 1990s, played in that Australia-Argentina two-legged playoff, which Argentina would win it 2-1 on aggregate and progress to the 94 World Cup in the USA. My final choice, Harry, and I'm open to suggestions and alternatives on these. Listeners, do let me know what you think. But I've gone for Casey Keller, great goalkeeper, wonderful goalkeeper. He just had this kind of... US 80s heavy rock mullet before he lost it. Whilst he had long hair, he had this kind
he enjoyed it.
He could have played him, I don't know, like a backing musician for Bon Jovi's band or something
definitely.
Kind of
he'd be the drummer at the back.
And he used to do this kind of gloved salute to the Cold Blow Lane in whenever he won in those days, at the last days of Cold Blow Lane. But anyway, he played in a CONCACAF, which is the South America. I think it's actually the combined, like a UEFA for American football. North America and South America. The CONCACAF Gold Cup semi-final. We played in a game in 1996, USA 0, Brazil 1. And Brazil, I think, would lose in the final to Mexico of that particular tournament. But Keller was in goal for the US, played in Los Angeles. Probably been a fair old crowd there with the Latin American presence. Yeah, absolutely. But some of his US compatriots, and we do have a US listeners, so there's a few names here for you. Casey Keller in goal. Alexei Lalas had a kind of there's a lot of hairstyles going on in US football this time. He had that kind of bubble, like a Simply Red style bubble perm kind of look with a goatee.
Don't you knock Simply Red.
John Hawks up front. I think it's Tab Ramos and Eric Ronaldo in the front line. The Brazilian team, I suppose the only one I recognise off the top of my head would be Zé Maria in number 2. I remember him. The others I don't know. There may have been some of their second string.
What's that, 96? That's sort of just...
96. They go in phases, Brazil, don't they?
That's sort of pre-Ronaldo, Roberto Carlos, Rivaldo, Danielson. It's all around. They would have had Taffarel not in goal.
Well, the coach was Zagallo. Mario Zagallo. Goal was Dida. Dida.
Ah, okay.
Dida, Andre Luiz, Carlinhos, Narciso, Savio.
They played their kids there.
Zé Maria, Amaral. I think his name, isn't he? Amaral. Flavio Conchichau. Not very good on Portuguese, listeners. Arison, Cow and Jamelli. So anyway, I thought that's a reasonably big game to be involved in, and I've got to name Casey just really because I haven't, just for the hell of it, really. I've picked out a few of others that we could have named or chosen.
David Fould, definitely.
Well, David Fould, who played in a World Cup qualifier for the Republic of Ireland, 0-3 loss against Germany, 2014 World Cup qualifier. Stephen Reid played in the 2002 World Cup groups as a Millwall player, which was in Japan, Korea, I think.
Yeah.
Tim Cahill, as a Millwall player in 2004, played in a World Cup qualifier for Australia for the 2006 tournament. And Lucas Neal played in Olympic football for Australia in 2000. That would be the Sydney Australian Olympics of 2000. As I say, some of this is really, really arbitrary, but I've just chosen the ones that I think were the the biggest situations as Millwall players. And then obviously we mentioned Jordan Archer, our one Scottish cap already.
That sums Jordan Archer up, doesn't it? One Scottish cap, never to return. Once bitten, twice shy.
And at fault for both goals, arguably.
Fergie's had a decent international career, looking at that.
Yeah, Shane Ferguson. He's a good player. I like Shane Ferguson. I can see why the Northern Irish squad would have him kind of as a go-to player, you know. And in all fairness to Conor McLaughlin, I think he's named quite a few times as a Millwall player. I don't know about now whether he's still featuring. Is it Fleetwood he plays for now, Harry?
I think he's at Sunderland, mate.
He's gone to Sunderland, has he?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's interesting when you look down the list and some of the names that leap out. Trinidad and Tobago, Justin Hoyt. Remember Justin Hoyt?
Wage thief.
Some names I've just completely forgotten. I don't remember.
Hammer Bouazza with one cap for Algeria.
Yeah, I mean, Bouazza, I had high hopes for him, but he had one good free kick goal, I think, didn't he, when he came to us?
And continued to attempt it for the rest of his Millwall career.
And then he's played in short sleeves and gloves, and that's never going to work at the Den.
That's banned.
I don't remember Justin Cochrane, who's a fellow Antiguan as Marlon Romeo. I don't remember Justin Cochrane, played a couple of caps.
Bobby Bowery.
Bowery for St Kitts. He's out, and as I say, we've got more St Kitts caps than we do for Scotland. Sean Cummins played for Jamaica there in 2015.
Paul Eiffel, two for Barbados. And Michael Jilks. No idea who Michael
Jilks. Yeah, you won't remember him. He was a kind of a bit part player. He wasn't bad. I didn't mind Jilks. He was in that 2001 squad. He was a kind of a filler sub player that would come in at certain points.
Talking of filler, I've just seen how many caps Bob Farson's had whilst he's been at Millwall. It's unbelievable. But shows how much international football's actually played. Because
look at the glittering scoring record he's got there, Harry. Look.
That's one. He's scored one against Moldova. As a Millwall player in a Euro 2020 qualifier. Did Iceland qualify for Euro 2020?
No, they went off the boil, didn't they? Was it 2016? They had a really good, was it Euro Championship?
Yeah, they beat us, didn't they, under Roy.
But he couldn't unlock the very, very tight Andorran defence. He didn't get a goal against them. He probably contributed. They beat Moldova.
They beat Moldova. He contributed by coming on probably as a 68th minute substitute. I mean, I always remember the one where England played him recently and he'd been subbed off just before they got the penalty. And I thought, if that doesn't sum up John Daddy Bob Varson in one sort of comical error.
Oh, man.
Moment.
You've got to look. We don't have many Czech caps, but we do have one now in 2018, Harry. Jiří Skalák played in a friendly win over 1-0 friendly win over Poland.
And you subbed.
And finally, just to conclude this show, one Russian cap, the legend who Sergei Juran played for Russia as a Millwall player in a 2-0 win over Malta friendly in 1996. So there we are, dear listeners. That's been a rather sprawling look at the international scene with Harry.
I'd ask one question. Of all the players in our current squad, who do you think, if they were any other home nation nationality, if they were, you know, the Republic of Ireland famously sort of find any Irishman, I think there's a few Millwall players that could get in that side at the moment.
Well, Jed would feature in if he was Northern Irish or Republic.
I think Coops as well, to be honest.
Cooper would, for any of the home nations. I hate this smaller nation term, but I think they would walk in, you know, if Jed was, I don't know.
Welsh.
Trying to think of some small nations now. If it was a Balkan from one of the Balkans, I don't know, he'd walk into a lot of teams, wouldn't he?
Yeah, he would.
Bradshaw's
not getting Welsh caps anymore. I'm concerned. No, John Daddy Bodvars. That shows you how bad the Icelandic selection for strikers must be when Bodvarsson gets in, but Bradshaw doesn't get in for Wales. So Wales can take that small comfort that they've moved on to the fact that they're better than Iceland.
In fairness to Iceland, I mean, I don't know what the population is of Iceland. If it's half a million, I'd be surprised. It's a small population to choose from. I mean, I know you can extend that into the people that live abroad and born to you know, Icelanders have moved abroad. I don't know. But no, I think Jed would walk into any of the home nations teams. I think I'd be more than pleased to have the talent that he's been showing this season. I think if he wasn't English, he would certainly qualify. That's always been Millwall's problem, I think. That's why we've got so few English caps, isn't it? Because we've never really played at a level where our players can shine and get consideration. I just want to mention before we close, Harry, the England B internationals in the 80s, Terry Hurlock and Alan McCleary, in our first division days, did get chosen for England B. I don't know if they still play B internationals. I don't think they do.
Probably not
for the fixture clutter, but we can't close any consideration of international football without mentioning Terry Hurlock and Alan McCleary, who played in the late 80s for England B, and probably would have, if we'd have stayed in the first division, we would have had others, I think.
But yeah,
probably. It was never to be.
Never to
there
be.
We actually. There we are.
I want to quickly mention congratulations to Ted Cheeseman last night in the boxing.
In boxing.
And, commiserations to Chris Congo as well, who lost, but wore his Millwall shirt with pride out in Gibraltar, which was nice to see us on the telly fighting Portsmouth, but not being, we didn't have the ticker tape of Sky News seeing a Millwall shirt being used in a fighting context, Nick. It was quite interesting for once to see it, but yeah.
Well done, Ted, and commiserations to Chris. Let's hope we can see some more of him going forward in the future.
Yeah, Ted, British champion again. So
fair play. Big thank you, Harry. Thank you for taking time out your day, mate.
No worries, mate. I'll go and have a roast dinner and open a bottle of red.
Nice one. Thank you to you too, dear listeners. Hope you've enjoyed this little filler show. We'll be back next week once the club football returns, such as there is in these strange days. So until then, dear listeners, from Harry and from myself, it's arrivederci Millwall, and bye for now.
Thank you for listening to Aston Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. Arrivederci Millwall, till next time.
Who do you want to watch?
's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.